I'm Stephen Hundley, and this is the award-winning podcast, Leading Improvements in Higher Education, a service of the Assessment Institute in Indianapolis. Our sponsor for this season is the Center for Assessment and Research Studies at James Madison University. This episode features editors of the second edition of the Routledge book entitled Coordinating Divisional and Departmental Student Affairs Assessment. Our guests are Aaron Bentram, Gavin Henning, and Kimberly Yowsey Elsner. Aaron is a data and learning analytics strategist at Anthology. Gavin is professor of higher education at New England College, where he directs graduate programs in higher education and provides leadership to the Center for Innovation, Teaching, Learning, and Scholarship. And Kim is visiting associate professor for higher education and student affairs at Binghamton University. I know you will enjoy the insights shared by these thought leaders during this episode of Leading Improvements in Higher Education. I'm delighted we have Kim, Aaron, and Gavin with us today to talk about their latest book. Kim, Aaron, Gavin, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having us.
Happy to be here.
I'm looking forward to our conversation today.
Well, me too. And as longtime listeners of our podcast know, we always begin by asking everyone to tell a little bit about their backgrounds, including things you do in your current role and any other career highlights you'd like to share. For this question, we'll start with Aaron, continue to Kim, and conclude with Gavin. Aaron.
Yes, I'm Aaron Bentram, and I am a data and learning analytics strategist at Anthology, Inc. And what that means is I work with our learner experiences, our learning experiences within Anthology Academy. I started off my career in higher education in student affairs. So that gave me a unique perspective to then move into institutional research and ultimately student affairs assessment, where I was for 15 years before making the leap to educational technology.
Aaron, thank you for that introduction. And now we come to Kim.
Hello, I'm Kim Yowsey Elsner, and I'm currently a visiting associate professor for higher education and student affairs at Binghamton University. As part of that role, I do research in career outcomes, career mobility, and the practice of student affairs assessment. And I also get the pleasure of teaching classes like student affairs assessment and the usual sort of higher ed kind of classes. I've been in the profession for over 20 years. I have taught at the graduate undergraduate level, and I've worked a lot in student affairs from res life to student activities to orientation and retention work. The bottom line is I've always been the data person wherever I've gone. So I've really loved being able to use data in all those roles. And my first formal student affairs assessment position was over 15 years ago. So I've been working in this field for quite some time and excited to talk about this topic.
Kim, thank you. And rounding out our introductions is Gavin.
I'm Gavin Henning, professor of higher education at New England College in New Hampshire. I direct our Doctor of Education programs and our higher education master's program. I also direct our new Center for Innovation, Teaching, Learning, and Scholarship. My current scholarship areas are around equity-centered assessment and sense of belonging, which I've worked with Aaron on. And before becoming a full-time faculty member 12 years ago, I spent 20 years in higher ed administration, mostly in student affairs, 13 of which were in assessment and institutional research. I actually began assessment work in 1997 and became a full-time director of student affairs assessment in 2000. So it's been interesting to see the evolution of student affairs assessment over the last 25 years.
Gavin, thank you. In fact, Gavin, let me just stay with you for our next question. You mentioned the evolution of this work. And so we'll go back in time a little bit to the first edition of Coordinating Divisional Student Affairs Assessment that was published in 2015 by Stylus. So Gavin, tell us about the genesis of this first edition and what we'd like our listeners to know about that particular book.
Great. Thanks, Stephen. And Aaron and Kim can either correct me if I'm wrong or add in some additional details because there was a long time ago. But from what I can remember, back in January of 2013, a person who was new to student affairs assessment, a new divisional leader of student affairs assessment, posted a question to the student affairs assessment leader's listserv asking for advice. So what should I be thinking about? How do I go about doing that? You know, and like the listserv, there was a lot of great suggestions, a lot of great feedback. And Dan Bureau, who was at that point was directing student affairs assessment at the University of Memphis, jokingly asked who was going to write an article about the about that advice. And there were some more emails that are going back and forth on a listserv thinking about it really is more than just an article. It really needed to be a book. And then there were some conversations about what would that book look like, both at the ACPA and NASPA conferences in the spring of 2013. And then from what I can remember at this point, Kim, Aaron, and I were the ones offered to take a lead on pulling this together. So we identified some key topics, got feedback from SAL listserv members, identified some authors who'd been working in student affairs assessment for a while who we knew could really provide some good context, some good information. And that was ultimately published in 2015. And then a couple of years ago in 2021, we really decided it's probably time for a second edition because things have changed actually a lot since 2015 when the last book was published.
Gavin, thank you for that context setting to the first edition of the book. And you mentioned, among other organizations, Student Affairs Assessment Leaders. I invite listeners to consult Season 1, Episode 12 of this podcast, Leading Improvements in Higher Education, where we had a conversation with colleagues from SAL. So, Aaron, the title for the second edition of the book has been expanded a bit to include Coordinating Departmental Student Affairs Assessment. Why did you add that focus to the most recent edition? And who is the intended audience for this book? Really, what are the differences between the first and second editions? Aaron.
Yes, that is a great question. And I'm glad that Gavin had the historical aspect for 2015. So one of the things we talked about, as Gavin mentioned, is how much the functional area of student affairs assessment has changed and evolved. So, for example, a survey that SAL put out in the last one was 2019, and 70% of institutions had at least one full-time staff member in student affairs assessment, compared to 52% in 2014. The other thing that we pulled out from that is in 2019, only 50% of student affairs assessment professionals had fewer than 5 years experience, as opposed to 2014, where they was 72% had fewer than 5 years experience. So what this said to us was we needed to expand a bit from what might be considered a senior divisional level student affairs assessment professional. More people, meaning more functional units within the divisions of student affairs, were doing assessment, and it wasn't just at the divisional level. They were departmental coordinators. And so we felt it was important to include not just at the overall umbrella organization of the division, but some content that we could give to actual unit leaders in assessment. As far as some differences in the book, we had several new chapters, and I think one, as Gavin mentioned, was one of, you know, an area of research that he's interested in, is we addressed equity-centered assessment. And that was not a topic that was covered at all in the 2015 edition. I think the other thing that we saw more of in this edition was a collaboration, emphasis on collaboration between student affairs, academic affairs, institutional research. So what you might call the assessment bodies of a university and campus. I think we had some great authors address those issues on how to work together and share data and not work in silos. So an emphasis on institutional effectiveness is something I felt like that came forward. Technology obviously has changed. So we've learned that you not only have to be competent in using the technology, but you have to advocate as a change agent. You have to be able to explore and evaluate new tools And Kim was the lead author on that chapter. So that was a really good one as well. Another piece that I'll mention is something that was new that we addressed more in depth is sharing compelling results. Again, if you think about the technology and data visualization, those were also some new things that a new chapter that we brought up and that were different in between the two editions. So those are just a few minor things to address.
Erin, thank you. You're describing, importantly, some of the differences and contributions included in the second edition of Coordinating Divisional and Departmental Student Affairs Assessment, this book published now by Routledge and Taylor and Francis Group. So, Kim, Erin was mentioning your contributions, and indeed, you, Kim, you, Erin, and Gavin have all served as co-editors of this book, but you did not do this work in isolation. You had a number of other contributors. So, tell us about some of the authors who have contributed to this book. Kim.
So, as Erin mentioned, the number of people in this field have grown just so much in the past few years. So one of the things that we really wanted to do with this second edition is include more voices from more perspectives, because we saw that as a great opportunity as the work is growing. So this book features chapters from 23 different authors. They range in higher education experience from vice presidents of student affairs to student affairs assessment practitioners, to institutional research and institutional effectiveness practitioners, to assessment scholars and educators, to consultants and folks working in what we probably call higher ed adjacent kind of roles. I think all of these perspectives really makes me excited about this book because it's, to me, a collection of wisdom. It's a collection from all of these folks, all of their perspectives, all of their views on how to make the work of student affairs assessment really powerful. And it brings in so many of the voices in order to support growing and enhancing those efforts. So I think it's just wonderful to be able to collect all of these different perspectives as you go through the book.
Kim, thank you. You're describing, in your words, quote, a collection of wisdom in student affairs assessment. And I invite listeners to consult the show notes of this episode for a link to the publication, Coordinating Divisional and Departmental Student Affairs Assessment. We've been acknowledging the evolution of student affairs as a profession, including the role of assessment in this work. So, Erin, how has student affairs assessment changed in the past 5 years between the publication of these two editions in particular? Erin.
Thanks, Stephen. So I've given this some thought, and I tried to think of the best way to summarize some of the shifts and changes in the field. And what I think I want to focus on is looking at the organizational frameworks of student affairs assessment. In the book, we do have a chapter on the organizational frames of assessment. And what we have now is more of a discussion of a model. I think it's become more formalized in a lot of ways. We have to look at not only the structure, but the human aspect of the organizational framework, along with the political piece of it, and actually the symbolic piece. So I think it's become more formalized in a lot of ways as far as the coordination of it. The other thing, which is related not only to the organizational framework, but the structures to organize and implement. So campuses are all different. Sometimes there's an office of one, which I was for many years, and then I was fortunate enough to gain some staff. And one university, I had an assessment committee. So I think what we look at are some different structures. You can now have committees at a departmental level. You can have divisional level committees. You can also have representatives from functional units, you know, form a team that way. If one unit, if it's student life, for example, and you've got three functional areas within that, you could have a representative from that speaks for that student life area. So I feel like now there's a more organization to it. It's a more formalized approach, in my opinion. And I don't know if Kim and Gavin have something they want to add to that as well.
Erin, thank you. You're describing, among other things, models, structures, and organizing frameworks to the work of student affairs assessment. And Kim, in the answer to the question I asked you a little bit ago about the authors who contributed to the book, let me do a bit of a follow-up and ask you to tell us more about the book itself, including content and some of the highlights or main points from the chapters, building on the overview Erin just provided. Kim.
So I really see this book as addressing what I think of as three overarching themes. So the first is what Erin was speaking to, this idea of how do you structure the work around student affairs assessment. And we have several chapters who talk about this from different perspectives. But really, the core sort of thread through all of them is this idea that there's no sort of one size fits all for every institution. So each chapter in their own way goes into how you can structure assessment, whether it's thinking about how you manage it through an office versus a committee versus another option, or whether you think about it in creating structures like assessment plans, really giving folks some resources and ideas around how you take into consideration organizational structures, cultures, human resources, politics, when you're setting up these systems and support networks for the assessment work. So that's the first theme, is sort of the structure piece. The second theme I see is skills essential to leading assessment. One common theme that I've heard from a long time ago, and I think a lot of us have done a lot of thinking about, is the difference between the skills needed to lead assessment versus do assessment. And so this book really focuses on those skills needed to lead those assessment efforts. It's things like how do you both approach and use an equity-centered mindset when you're doing assessment? How do you use your role as a leader to build capacity within your department and division for doing assessment work? How do you use technology in assessment work? And how do you understand how that technology infrastructure fits into a larger idea at the university? And then the data storytelling and data visualization that Erin mentioned earlier as well is becoming a very important skill set for someone who's leading those efforts, sort of what I think of as the data translator for the division or the department. And then finally, in that skills part, is actually thinking about how you integrate assessment results into strategic planning and budgeting. So that's the skills sort of theme around the book. And then the third one is relationship building. There are many chapters on different views on how you build relationship. One of my favorite quotes from the book is a quote that says, "Relationships are the secret sauce to assessment." And when I read that, I was like, oh, yes, that is just a juicy quote from the book. But really, we're thinking about how assessment coordinators or those leading assessment efforts can use those relationships. Oftentimes, coordinators, at least in the roles I've been in, I've never been a direct supervisor of anyone, but I needed a lot of people to follow in the direction that we were going. And so a lot of that's about building relationships. So there are chapters on how to supervise, both formal supervision and informal supervision. There are chapters on working across the university with other data folks from institutional effectiveness, institutional research, other assessment offices. There's chapters on navigating politics in assessment. And there's work around this, just this general idea of how do you better collaborate in order to make the assessment work stronger. So that's the third theme, is relationship building. And then finally, the book is wrapped up by sort of looking into the future. So taking what we've learned in the past few years about student affairs assessment work, and thinking about the changes that are happening now in higher education and how that could both form and change what we do in student affairs assessment, but also the really important role that student affairs assessment folks have in the conversation about the future of higher education. And one of the examples from that chapter is about how student affairs folks in particular are really, one of their strong points is thinking about student success and how each piece of the university can help support that student success. And that's an important conversation to have and bring to the table when institutions are focusing on equitable student success and how can student affairs contribute to that role. And that's just one piece of that chapter, but really taking some lessons we've learned and thinking about how we can contribute to future conversations.
Kim, thank you. You are highlighting the organizational and contextual factors, skills, relationships, and future trends, all content in the book. And you remind us, of course, there is not a one-size-fits-all approach to this work. For our remaining questions, I would like to ask each of you to briefly offer your own perspective. So we've been talking a lot about the book. How do you envision readers using this book in their professional practice? What advice do you have for experienced student affairs professionals and perhaps those who are newer to the profession? And how can colleagues working outside of student affairs benefit from this book? For all these questions, we'll start with Gavin, continue to Aaron, and conclude with Kim. Gavin.
Thanks, Stephen. I'm going to follow that theme of a one size does not fit all. Because we really intended this book to be, while there's an intentional sequence between the chapters and Kim outlined the main topical areas, it really isn't necessarily a book that's read from cover to cover. I think it really depends on where folks are in their professional journey and their assessment journey. And it might be more helpful to take a look at the table of contents and pick and choose which chapters will be most helpful. And so I think that's probably the best approach to using this book and trying to figure out what's going to be the most useful information. And regarding the pieces of advice, I actually have the same pieces of advice for folks in student affairs, regardless if they're new to this work or if they've been doing this work for a while. And there are really three pieces. The first is encouraging folks to make connections with other people doing student affairs assessment. You know, I think about when I started doing this, Aaron was one of the first people I met. There are a few other folks who actually were authors in this book. And that was a great learning community to develop because we were all kind of just kind of figure this stuff out, trying to figure out what to do. There weren't a lot of models. There weren't a lot of resources at that point in the early 2000s. And so really being able to learn from each other as we're kind of building the plane as we were flying it were really helpful. You know, and then later on, I got to meet Kim and got to learn about some of the stuff she was doing. It was a great support to help me think about what am I doing well? What am I not doing well? Also, like, what are the challenges, which we actually describe in some of those chapters, and how do people overcome those? The other piece of advice would be making connections outside of student affairs. Aaron mentioned this a little bit. There are a lot more connections to institutional research folks, academic assessment folks, institutional effectiveness folks, because finally, higher education is thinking a little bit more synergistically. I think when a lot of us started this work, you know, 20 years ago, there were still big silos around that. And I think we realized that the data needs to be shared across those units. But even more importantly, students aren't living in these compartmentalized experiences. So we really need to think about how do we work together across these different departments and divisions to use our data to really understand what's happening with student learning and student experiences to improve upon those. And then the third thing is really about the complexity of higher education and higher education organizations. Again, one size doesn't fit all. And some are more complex, some are larger, some are decentralized, some are more centralized. And sometimes it's a little challenging to actually turn those assessment results into change. And so that can be frustrating for folks, particularly those who are new to leading departmental or divisional assessment, because they can't necessarily control everything. Even the leaders of their department or their division can't control everything. So my advice is to really encourage folks to think about what can you change in your area of influence and really focus on that and try not to get too caught up on the things you can't change. Because I think all of us can have an impact in some little corner of our world, even if it's the one program we work with or the one service we provide. And then finally, for folks outside of student affairs, I think there's a lot to take away from these chapters. You know, while the chapters are framed around the context of student affairs, the ideas really are applicable beyond that. Anybody doing assessment has to supervise others. They have to share compelling results. They have to keep in mind the organizational structures in which they're working and which their units are working with others. And so a lot of the topics really can be transferable. Just the examples are related to student affairs. So those would be the advice that I'd provide.
Gavin, thank you. Against the backdrop of Gavin's very sound advice, let me now come to Aaron to weigh in with your perspectives. Aaron.
I think Gavin covered a good deal of what I would say as well. And I want to build upon a little bit about, you don't have to necessarily read the book cover to cover. If there's, you've encountered a political or ethical issue in your work, what does this text say about that? How have colleagues handled it? So I think it can be a problem-solving text. So that's really a good way to look at this text. I think for my advice for experience to student affairs professionals is you have to keep up in the field. Look and see what others are doing. Sometimes we get set in our, own ways of managing a student affairs assessment office, and there might be some new ideas out there, especially around technology, data lakes, data warehouses. So that would be my advice there. And then for those newer to the profession, and we've said this, but the value of relationships, both internal stakeholders on campus and then external colleagues, that is the best way to learn new things, because each institution does have or may have such a different approach and setup and structure and process for assessment evaluation that learning what's happening, there's a good chance that somebody has encountered a similar challenge that you are also facing. I think the other thing is sometimes it can feel lonely. So your colleagues can help you celebrate successes as well. So that's another thing to think about. It's not just challenges, but those opportunities. I would say anybody experienced or newer in the profession, share those good things out. One thing that I really, one thing that I think is a hurdle in my daily work, and then again, when I was in the assessment field full-time in higher ed, actionable change. That is where I think we really need to focus. I think we've come a long way in measuring advanced data evaluation, but we really need to look at how to make those changes. What are we doing to impact student success? And I think that's something that I would advise folks reading the book or in the field to think about.
Erin, thank you. We are hearing a theme of managing change and influencing in one's context. So Kim, let's come to you for advice you would like to offer.
Everything that Erin and Gavin have said, but a couple of new ones that I think of. I don't know why, but sometimes I envision folks using this book sort of like a book club for student affairs assessment committees. Because I could see this as a tool when I ran assessment committees as a way to kind of ground the work and maybe revitalize or re-energize a committee that's been around for a while and thinking about what their next step is, or a committee who's just starting and thinking about where do we even start? Where do we go? I feel like different chapters from this book or, providing some space to think about it, it gives a good framework to get people started on doing the work. So I really think that could be one way the book could be used. As far as newer and or more experienced professionals, I too kind of see that as maybe both of them using it in similar ways. But to echo a little bit about what Gavin and Erin had said and maybe take it a little bit further, I think especially for the folks who are out there who are often doing assessment work as what we call the N of one, right? The office of one, even if they're in a department, they might be the only assessment person in that department. And I know that in my experience, you're often doing the work every day. You're just doing the work and trying to get it done. And what I think this book provides you is an opportunity to stop and reflect and think. I think sometimes we think what we're doing is just what we do when we realize we can read a book like this and realize, oh yeah, we're doing this well. Wow. Yay. We've made some progress here. Or we might find some things where we're like, oh yeah, we should think about this differently. And I'm hoping that book gives folks the opportunity to stop and think and reflect on their practice, especially in a sort of a profession that's a little bit more of isolated work. I think it gets you out of your little one-person office and thinking a little bit more connected with the profession. And then I think also for the folks outside of student affairs, in my world, I feel like we hear a lot of differences or silos in higher education. The assessment work in student affairs that's being done is so different than the assessment work that's being done in other units or other areas on the campus. And I think that there's a lot of crossover, and I think there's a lot of opportunity for collaboration if we can start seeing the similarities. And I think that this book does a great job or provides a good opportunity to talk about some of those areas that are the same, that it is similar work, and that we do use some similar techniques, that if we collaborated more across campus, we could even have greater power in what we're finding in our data.
Kim, thank you. We've been receiving advice from the three co-editors of the second edition of Coordinating Divisional and Departmental Student Affairs Assessment. So as you envision a potential third edition in the future, how do you think that edition would differ from the previous two? We'll ask each of you to briefly weigh in on this, beginning with Kim, continuing to Aaron, and concluding with Gavin. Kim.
Well, two things popped into my head. I think one of the hardest chapters to write in both the first and second edition of this book was the technology chapter. And I know Aaron and I both been involved in various variations of it along the way. And that's because, not surprisingly, technology keeps changing. So the first thing that popped into my head is probably the most obvious, which is our technology chapter doesn't mention AI. It wasn't in the forefront when this book went to print. So already we have the technology landscape changing in a way that will help shape the practice. So I can really see that topic in particular change quite a bit in a third edition. And I also see the conversations around creating larger data sets that go across systems and across the institution becoming more of a conversation as well. And how do you make that happen in a way that can help inform overall student success on a campus? And that's something that we haven't sort of dove into yet, because I think it's still a growing conversation in the assessment world, especially in student affairs. But I see that being something that could be talked about in a future book.
Kim, thank you. You're mentioning larger data sets and the influence of AI or artificial intelligence as potential topics for the future. Let's now turn to Aaron.
Well, I think in some ways it's hard to predict what it would look like. Like Kim said, in this last, most current edition, we didn't really touch upon AI. So sometimes it's hard to predict. But I would say technology, again, is going to be a big theme. And I'm looking back, I was a co-author of Technology in the 2015 edition, and I looked back and said, okay, so what do we focus on then? We were talking about clicker response systems and card swipe technology. And then we moved, to this edition, that's not something that's even really in the forefront of the discussion. So I think paying attention to that and how that really impacts our work. I also think, again, I'm hopeful with the collaboration aspect of it. I think, and I mentioned this, but the power behind decision-making for an institutional effectiveness purpose is something that I hope to continue to see grow. I hope to see more collaborations between all of those offices. And maybe that'll be a bigger aspect to the third edition of how the data sharing works, how some actionable change, again, the impact of student success from all aspects of a student's life, from enrollment and admissions to career services, graduation. So I think that would be an important piece to maybe expand upon.
Aaron, thank you. To the technology influences, we've added, of course, collaborating and decision-making as potential future topics. Gavin, round it out with your thoughts on the future.
Sure. I have, a few additional ones to add to Kim and Aaron. First, I hope our third edition will have a little bit more focus on one's positionality and how that impacts assessment, as well as really beginning to examine the paradigms drive assessment practice. Many of these are research paradigms, but they're also assessment paradigms. And I don't think we've done a really good job in the field really kind of unpacking those things and what are those uninterrogated assumptions or beliefs or values that really drive assessment that impact not only the assessment results, but how those results are used. I think we'll probably see a little bit more focus on non-Western approaches to assessment. You know, for example, the use of talking circles in place of focus groups. I think there's a continuing evolution of the conversation, how to involve students. Not only does this help address equity issues, but I really believe that involving students in the assessment process builds buy-in from them, but also gives them some important skills they're going to use regardless of their career. I think the focus on data analytics, data visualization, predictive and prescriptive analytics is going to continue to grow, but I think it's going to build on data science, an emerging field that many of our institutions actually have undergraduate and graduate degrees in. So I think we're going to pull in some of that, the specifics of data science that's going to inform all of those elements. I think there's also going to be more emphasis on closing the loop and using the findings for change. I think that's still the one part of the assessment cycle we struggle with because there are just so many variables that are built into there. I think we've been doing a better job saying that we have to do this, but I think there's some elements and some things to discuss about how can you do that? What are some barriers to that? What are some strategies for actually using those results for change and improvement? And as Kim mentioned, I think AI is going to be really important. But as Aaron also mentioned, things change pretty quickly. You know, for artificial intelligence, it's changing every single day, sometimes every hour. And so I'm not sure how we might address that in a book that would that may take 18 months to publish, but I think it's going to find its way in there somehow. And maybe it's about how do we, more broadly include various types of technology, not just platforms and things like that, but tools such as artificial intelligence. So who knows what's going to happen in a few years because things are just moving so quickly in the higher education landscape.
Gavin, thank you. You're reminding us, of course, that all of this remains a work in progress. And we've been focusing a bit on student affairs assessment. I'd like to pan back a little bit and look to the future more broadly across the higher education sector and ask each of you to briefly weigh in on what you're observing as themes and trends happening right now, and perhaps what excites you and gives you hope for the future. For this, we'll start with Aaron, continue to Gavin, and conclude with Kim. Aaron.
I think one theme that is exciting to me is there's more of an emphasis and understanding of diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging. I think sense of belonging we are finding is key to student success. And there's been a lot of work around that, even since Gavin and I did our publication on sense of belonging. So there's some movement in that. I'm pleased to see that, and that is exciting. I think the other thing, and again, not to keep going back to technology, but I think some of the learning to use these tools as an efficiency measure, I think as higher education may struggle with shifts and changes in the economy or student enrollment, how can those tools make us more efficient? How can they make us better? And one thing I think about as a student affairs assessment professional, at one point in time, I was responsible for working with 25 units within the division. So let's say I've got 15 of those 25 that need to learn how to write student learning outcomes. That's a tool that I can use to build capacity for them and then to help myself to be more efficient. So those are things I'm thinking about: diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging, and also becoming more efficient with the tools and technology that we have and using them in a fashion that makes us better.
Aaron, thank you. And now to Gavin.
So I have a few things that are rolling around in my head, but first is really to focus on using assessment as inquiry, not just as documenting some change or demonstrating learning or even using assessment for improvement, but really to understand and expose and change barriers to equity. As Aaron mentioned, the focus on diversity, equity, inclusion is really evolving. To the point that many folks have stopped using the term equity gaps, which sometimes places the onus on students, to institutional performance gaps, where the focus is really on what is the institution doing to remove barriers to success for all students. So really thinking about assessment as a vehicle So advanced equity, I think, is an emerging point that I think that would be exciting moving forward. I'm also seeing a lot more focus on experiential education, problem-based learning, place-based learning. And so not only is this better pedagogy because students are more engaged in their learning skills that they really need in the world, real world, but it provides more opportunity for authentic assessment of student learning and development. And so that may force us to think a little bit differently about how do we do those kinds of assessment? And so what does that look like? What are the grading tools such as rubrics we use? How do you do a better job developing those rubrics? Now that I direct a Center for Teaching and Learning, I'm seeing some of these rubrics and our faculty could do a little bit better on those. And I'm not sure they're as effective as they can be or should be in measuring student learning. I think we're also going to continue to see a shift in student learning outcomes for beyond the focus of a specific classroom or even an academic program and focus on the integration of career readiness. You know, I'm seeing at some institutions, they're actually integrating career readiness into academic programs because they're not separate. They're not really exclusive of each other. And students really need some of these broader career readiness competencies as well as specific skills and knowledge within a discipline. And then similarly, I'm seeing a lot more interdisciplinary approaches to majors and curricula. So departments are coming together to align learning outcomes across programs, to collaborate, which is better for students. But all of these have implications for how we go about doing assessment both in the classroom and outside of the classroom.
Gavin, thank you for previewing some of the trends you are witnessing. And now we come to Kim.
I think adding to what Gavin and Aaron have said, the things that I've been looking at in higher ed as far as trends is looking at this larger conversation around policy at the state and federal level and how that is impacting institutions in lots of ways and in small ways and big ways. But whether it's in states where it's now challenging how we think about curriculum and how we think about inclusive environments, or whether it's states where we're thinking about funding lines, but I think, and many other things, but I think one thing that it's really, that I'm seeing is this idea of how do we rethink our usual sort of measure of success for higher education? This other conversation that it's driving is this idea around student success measures beyond graduation and retention. Figuring out what student success looks like prior to graduation and how do we measure that and how do we understand that on our campus so we can ensure that more students are succeeding. Also, this idea of questioning or rethinking things like ranking systems and accreditation standards and Carnegie classifications and all of the things that sort of have shaped how higher education has shaped itself over the past few decades in particular. So it's been really interesting to me to see how that then affects how we measure our success. And like Gavin said, I'm seeing a lot of campuses now think about not just career outcomes, first destination career outcomes, but also how do we measure career things like career and economic mobility beyond just a job and a salary? Because most of us know that those things aren't necessarily a great measure of career success. Long-term. And so really starting to rethink the paradigms that we've had for a long time about student success, what it looks like, and more importantly, how we measure it.
Interrogating our structures and policies and preparing for a dynamic future. Wise words indeed from Aaron, Kim, and Gavin as we look ahead. As we conclude this episode, though, we always ask guests to leave listeners with a brief final thought, maybe a word of wisdom from something you've already said or something you'd like to leave us with today. So I'd like to ask Gavin, then Kim, and then Aaron to leave us with their brief final thought. Gavin.
Thanks, Stephen. So one mantra that was really helpful to me as I directed student affairs assessment, even in academic assessment, is this idea that assessment isn't an activity. It's a state of mind. So I think many people still think of assessment as an add-on, a burden, and not really an essential part of everyday practice. Once we begin to think about assessment as part of everyday practice and really begin to integrate it into our work, it doesn't feel like a burden or an add-on and actually becomes part of everything we do, the way we think about things. And so we really need to think about how we gather data to know how well we're doing things, but how do we move past it being an activity and just being the way we do things and the way we think about things?
Gavin, thank you. Next, we come to Kim.
I think my biggest word of wisdom is what I've learned through the years through watching my students is that data empowers. We have a wonderful tool that we have access to as student affairs assessment people, as assessment folks in general, and those just working in higher education. The more information we have, the better we can be at what we do. And it's been really fun for me to see my higher ed students learn that and bring that out to the profession. So I think the more that we can empower people to use the data to do their work better, I think that higher education is just going to be a better place.
Kim, thank you. And our final thought today comes to us from Aaron.
I have two things that I've been thinking about as far as words of wisdom. And the first thing is use your data. Use it to tell a story. Make your goal be using your data to move along to prescriptive analytics so we can identify specific actions or interventions. So we have this data, let's use it. And then the other thing I don't think we do enough of is involving our students in assessment. And by that, I mean not just as respondents, but involve them in the whole assessment cycle. I think that is key to addressing some of our equity-centered assessment, making sure we're addressing those issues, is to have students involved, have their language, their lived experiences. So use your data and involve your students would be my two thoughts of advice for that.
Aaron, thank you. We've been speaking with Aaron Bentram, Kim Yousey-Elsner, and Gavin Henning, all of whom are co-editors of the second edition of Coordinating Divisional and Departmental Student Affairs Assessment. I invite listeners to consult the show notes of this episode for links to that publication. Aaron, Kim, Gavin, thanks so much for your time. I really have enjoyed our conversation.
Thanks, Stephen. We appreciate the opportunity to talk about the work.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for having us on.
Indeed. Thanks again to all of you. This has been Leading Improvements in Higher Education, the award-winning podcast service of the Assessment Institute in Indianapolis. Learn more and access other episodes at assessmentinstitute.iupui.edu. Our sponsor for this season is the Center for Assessment and Research Studies at James Madison University. Learn more at jmu.edu/assessment. Our podcast producers are Chad Beckner and Angela Bergman, with original music composed by Caleb Keith. If you know someone who might enjoy the podcast, please encourage them to give us a listen. We appreciate your help in spreading the word. I'm Stephen Hundley, inviting you to join us again for Leading Improvements in Higher Education.